take testimony for those in opposition. Commissioner Walker.
Thank you. Senator, I'm going to say Senator. Just Gerzowski, because I want to get the right ones in my career. Representative Haskell and members of the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee. My name is Marty Magnuson. I'm Commissioner of the Department of Corrections, and I'm here today to speak in opposition to LD 1611. This bill would seriously jeopardize the health and safety of both staff and inmates and requires substantial additional costs to the department and the state during a budgetary crisis. I can tell you with 100% certainty that more of our staff and inmates would be at serious risk to be injured or killed if this LD passed. And I would like to point out that this LD is not just for the Maine State Prison. That's where the tours have been. It's also what pertains to the Maine Correctional Center and to Down East. The words solitary confinement are outdated, are not mentioned in any department's policies, and are only once mentioned in a very old statute. When I hear solitary confinement, I go back to the Birdman of Alcatraz. We don't use that terminology, and I think it personally is a misrepresentation when it is used. Inmates and special management and our special management units receive mental health services, case planning, and those case plans are not done through the door. And it's not in our policy that they be done through the door. And visits. They receive 2 hours of visits every week if they have visitors. They receive phone calls. They can make 3 phone calls a week, not 1, and that is in our policy. They are provided opportunities to be unit cleaners and to progress through the unit and be released back to general population. The broad term solitary confinement paints a one-size-fits-all image, which is far from accurate. The individuals placed in our high-risk units have multiple individual security and treatment needs. These individuals are generally assigned to high-risk units for 1 of 3 reasons. The first is disciplinary SAG. Disciplinary SAG is for individuals who have committed a serious rules violation, such as assault or possession of drugs. 96% of our inmates do less than 45 days in disciplinary SAG. Administrative SAG is for individuals who are an escape risk or a danger to others. The national average is 5.8% of the population in the United States of the administrative SAG. In Maine, it's 1.8%. I would say that that is better than the norm. 93% of our inmates do less than 45 days in administrative SAG. To be an administrative is not a classification process. It's an administrative hearing with reviews and follow-ups within a week and then other times. We meet or exceed all national standards regarding those hearings. The reason I want to point out 96%, 93% is, and sometimes there's a vision that all these people are there and they're not moving. It's a very dynamic, fluid process in our high-risk units of inmates going in, us working with them, and then going back to population. High-risk management is a status determined by the classification committee. For those prisoners whose behaviors have been found to pose the highest risk to the public, staff safety, and safety to other prisoners and security management of the facility. This group tends to have the longest stays in the special management unit. To assist in treating and motivating the high-risk population, the prison has established a five-level system. An individual case plan is completed on each individual in high risk. Behavioral programs are provided, such as anger management, managing anxiety, substance abuse, changing negative thinking, and many other topics. That said, there are inmates within the 3 designations that are held longer than a required time. There are people, for example, that are in disciplinary SAG that don't get out after they've served their sentence. For many months, we have been taking steps to reduce these numbers, and we have been successful. And we also have a plan that would totally eliminate anyone from staying longer than their time within those respective classes. And I would be happy to outline that in questioning today or in a work session. Maine policy is that an individual cannot be placed in any of these categories without a hearing or without an appeal process. These hearings and review processes meet or exceed national standards. The majority of individuals with the NSAG and high-risk designation can be given supported skills that will allow them to go back to the population, and general population, and ultimately from our system. But a smaller number are extremely dangerous individuals. They pose a very real threat and an ongoing threat to prison staff and other inmates. In some cases, special management is the only means to protect human life. Now, I'm going to just refer to some of the parts of this bill. First is the definition. The definition of serious mental illness offered in this LD describes a prison population that would encompass the majority of individuals housed within a special management unit, as well as a significant portion of the general population of prisoners. The notion that self-harm or psychiatric distress equates to serious mental illness is something that the department cannot support and is not supported nationally. Most individuals who enter the criminal justice system experience some level of psychiatric distress. Yet this does not mean they meet the criteria of having a serious mental illness. Likewise, self-interest behavior is not always a sign of underlying mental illness. Disruptive and oppositional behavior can be commonplace in a prison setting. All in all, these aspects of the serious mental illness definition cited in LD 1611 and mentioned above would result in over-identifying a significant portion of the prison population as being mentally ill. This misrepresentation would, in fact, divert treatment resources from those prisoners in our system with true mental illness. And I want to repeat this because I think this is one of the tragedies of this bill. We'd be providing less service to the truly mentally ill, the people that really need our work. And I think that some of our most dangerous inmates with this criteria would manipulate into the mental health unit, where there would be much more out-of-cell time, and that our mentally ill would be put in a very vulnerable situation, as well as our staff. Further, the department does not currently have space or staff to house and treat the number of mentally ill that would meet the treatment criteria under this definition. The cost of housing construction and staffing to meet this definition would be over $11 million a year. The Department of Corrections has no question regarding our responsibility to serve the needs of those individuals with mental illness who are incarcerated within our prison system. The DOC takes this charge extremely seriously and strives to provide as high a standard of mental health care that we can within our facilities. Oftentimes, the frequency and level of treatment that our prisoners receive exceeds the level of care that they are receiving in the community prior to incarceration. As a department, we have brought in outside independent auditors to review our mental health service provisions in our facilities, and we are held to national standards through the ACA process. And we have also recently added three psychiatric social workers at the Maine State Prison. Next section, number three, is limitation on confinement and rights to a hearing. This section limits a person's confinement in special management to 45 days unless the person has committed a sexual assault, an escape attempt, or an assault. The purpose of special management is to stop them from doing the three things above. Depicted because they don't do them when they're in our special management unit, that they wouldn't do them when they're released from the general population is a total fallacy. And I can cite case after case where that's happened. Individuals like the person that stabbed a female staff person and an inmate and took them hostage would have to be released under this section. Individuals that brutally beat sex offenders and weak inmates, who called driving sex offenders out of the population spring cleaning, would have to be released. Inmates who have a long history of assaults on staff would have to be released. The next section is 3A. In this section, inmates will have a right to be represented by an attorney in these administrative hearings. The cost for the department to pay for those attorneys alone would be $1.3 million a year. We did not factor in the cost of the attorney general's cost of having to represent the department in all these cases. The next section is corporal punishment, physical restraints, chemical agents, and forcible extraction. This section states instruments of, and I know there's been an amendment, and if it's prudent, I'll comment on that amendment. But this section states instruments of physical restraint, such as handcuffs, chains, leg shackles, restraint chairs, and four-point restraints cannot be used on special management inmates. This section would also cause physical harm to both staff and inmates. I have personally seen how much a determined inmate can hurt himself and staff if not restrained appropriately. I have seen several staff try to hold an inmate down that was trying to cut himself up and hurt himself. The inmate was able to bang his head on the concrete floor to the point of near unconsciousness and at the same time be able to bite and kick both staff. A restraint chair is a very humane method to protect both inmates and staff. The chair should only be used after all forms of de-escalation have been used and never punishment. We can find no jurisdiction in the country that doesn't allow for restraints. Just a couple other points regarding restraints. When I first went to the prison, the method of restraint then was handcuffs, and that's in the amendment. That was one of the most inhumane methods of restraint I've ever seen. The method used to be to have the inmate shackled behind and have his legs shackled. And time and again, I saw how much the inmate was able to hurt himself in spite of all the efforts of staff by banging his head on the floor, on the toilet. The handcuffs did not work. We looked for years nationally as to what was the best method to humanely restrain an individual. And the restraint chair is by far the most humane of any means that we can find. That said, when a person's in a restraint chair, mental health workers are immediately there, the person's observed all the time, and we have a very short turnaround working with that person to get them back to be able to go back into their cell. Just another point on this. While I was at the prison, I reviewed I don't know how many moves when we had to move an inmate out of their cell. And I think the way the staff do it at the prison and at the correctional center could be a training film. They try to de-escalate time and again, sometimes spending 20, 25 minutes trying to get that person to come out. And in most cases, they were able to do it. But when they couldn't, they did it, and the methods they used are exactly what we staff were trained in at NIC in Colorado, done extremely professionally. And then the person was put in the restraint chair, and I reviewed all the uses of that restraint chair. Before we moved to de-escalation, before we moved to other techniques, we were using a restraint chair at the prison upwards of over 400 times a year. Last year, we used it about 50. I think a lot of the work that we don't use it unless we absolutely have to. The staff don't want to use it unless they have to. Next section is transfers to out-of-state facilities. This section is so strong that it will virtually block the transfer of inmates out of state. We transfer inmates out of state so that they can be in the state that they're from. We transfer inmates out of state so that they can have medical care. We have one that we're able to transfer to a federal system so that they can receive dialysis within the facility at a savings to the state of Maine, but a better level of care for that person. We also transfer people out of state for their own protection. We have some inmates that actually beg us to be moved because they know they're in absolute jeopardy, and when we know that's the case, we move them. Finally, some inmates become so knowledgeable of the department or who become so dangerous, we transfer them out of state. We have approximately 25 inmates out of state today. That's less than 1% of our population. I looked at the list of who we have out of state. If we had to bring them back because of this bill, it would be frightening. And I don't know where we would house them because we could not house them in general population. They are some of the most dangerous people that we've dealt with over many years. One example of a highly dangerous individual would be the person who, along with his accomplice, was going to smuggle a gun into the prison during visits. Immediately shoot a staff person and then a visitor, and ultimately, if not released, kill all civilian visitors and finally himself. This person had also compromised the prison's computer and security systems. The ability to transfer inmates out of state has been tested twice in the courts of Maine and once by the United States. State Supreme Court, and has been upheld in all cases. I've been around a long time, and I can honestly say that I have not seen legislation that would be more harmful to our employees and the inmates within our facilities. any budget meeting recently with this committee, I was asked what would be the final straw to bring this department down after all the budget restrictions. Trust me, this bill would do it. The cost of this LD would be $12.6 million a year, and I think that's conservative. When all departments are experiencing major budget reductions, and when our staff are experiencing shutdown days and other work reductions. After this huge expenditure, we would have a department that would be less safe and much less effective in our ability to provide programs. I've worked with this committee for many years, and I hope that we've demonstrated that we have continuously worked to implement best practices to improve the quality of life of individuals under our care, and at the same time, to provide the safest possible conditions for both staff and inmates. This bill will do just the opposite. I do not believe we need legislation on this matter. Whenever there has been an issue within the department, and I could go way back to the old Main Youth Center, this committee has provided guidance and oversight without legislation. If there are issues you feel that need to be addressed, I would welcome your oversight again. I urge you to vote ought not to pass on this bill. Thank you, and I would be happy to try to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm sorry I had to step out for a couple moments, so I didn't have the opportunity to hear it at the beginning. But, of course, this committee has always taken its role in oversight and policy very seriously. But I want to ask you one question now. I'm sure the other members of the committee are going to have some. Do you have the authority to ship anybody out of the state to anything besides another state facility, or do you have the authority to send people to private facilities out of state?
No.
No to what?
No to sending them to private facilities.
Yes to?
Yes to being able to send them to other state facilities.
That are under state control.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Now I'll take questions from the committee. Representative Plummer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Commissioner. I have a few questions, but the first one would be regarding an incident that I seem to recall 2 or 3 weeks ago at Maine Correctional Center. It may or may not have or have been impacted by this bill, but if you would, could you comment on that incident and things that might happen or whatever you could tell us about that?
Thank you, Representative. And I think that's a good example, that incident, of why we need restraint. Four inmates flooded their cells, and excuse me if I'm overly graphic, but the toilets were filled with feces and urine. They flooded the unit. Then they put mattresses over the windows, and they said they were cutting up. And so our staff had to go in. You couldn't see in through the window. And our staff and the tactical unit team went in there. And one of the inmates smeared feces and urine all over his body. And our staff moved them to the restraint chair, restrained them for a relatively short period of time, and were able to get order back in the unit. Those four inmates were trying to incite the entire unit to riot. And I think it's a good example of why we need restraints, because if we didn't, under the old way, without restraints, those staff would have had to basically try to hold that person down, rolling on the floor in a flooded unit, and become contaminated with feces and urine. By being able to move them out, move that person out, clean that person out, and put them in a restraint chair, it's not only is better for the inmate, it's also much safer for the for our staff.
If I may continue, could you brief us on what the organization is that accredits facilities, correctional facilities, and how many of our correctional facilities, state correctional facilities, are accredited?
The American Correctional Association is considered to be the gold standard as far as accreditation for corrections, and they have accredited and reaccredited our facilities. The Maine Correctional Center is accredited. Long Creek Juvenile Facility, Calumet Juvenile Facility, Charleston Adult Facility, and the Maine State Prison are all accredited.
Thank you. Earlier there was testimony that referred to prisoners in SFU threat or total. Also, the term 3 months was used by a previous speaker. If you could do the same thing for that, and perhaps give us the average length of time that a prisoner spends in SMU. And I don't know if you're prepared to speak on that today, or if that's information you'll provide for the work session.
I can provide more detail for the work session, and but it's two-thirds of our inmates do less than 20 days in NSAC, and it's even a much higher percentage of that in disciplinary SAC. I will go over, but I'm not seeing, I think I'm only seeing one case that reaches a year, but I'll go over that. We'll get that for you for the work session. Our goal is to do a case plan with all the inmates at high risk and move them through as quickly as possible. And I think we're very successful with disciplinary and NSAG doing that. But we have had a couple of cases where the person basically told us that if you let me out, I will kill staff and I will do whatever I need to do to escape. And I've gone on that record for a long period of time. But I'll give you the full, we'll give you a full breakdown of all of that.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Commissioner. I understand Dr. Grassi did not visit the facilities. Did he call and ask to speak with you or ask for any of your comments or observations regarding the facility?
No, and I just will say I found it somewhat disturbing to take anecdotal information from a couple of people. Read policy, but obviously it wasn't written very well because he said we one phone call a week, we give three. I could go on and on. He said that we're doing our intakes through the cell. We never do that. Our intakes are face to face, our case planning is face to face, our mental health work is face to face. So sitting there, they were just, I heard a number of major inaccuracies, and I wish he had taken the time to other facility, maybe talk to some of our staff, that offer is there. Although I'm not sure it would change the testimony, but that offer is always there. We're quite transparent as far as what we do.
Thank you. And specific to the specifics of his testimony regarding the state of Maine, the work session, you'd like to provide us some information that might further enlighten those particular questions.
I appreciate that. I just do think that we are well above the norm and not below the norm of the Maine. We're not Pelican Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, the accreditation team, how many individuals on that team?
I'm sorry.
On the accreditation team, how many individuals are on the team?
Generally three, and sometimes four. And they break down their expertise. They have different levels of expertise when they come. One person would be in charge of HR resources. One person reviews security. One person specifically reviews programs and mental health. And that's their expertise from which they come. So the people that are looking at mental health, that's what they do. And so it generally is generally three.
Thank you.
Representative Sykes, please.
Thank you, Senator. Good afternoon, Commissioner. When you talked about the high-risk management of folks that are in SMU, you mentioned this is a five-level system involving an individual case plan, which might include such things as managing anxiety, substance abuse, anger management, changing negative thinking, depending on topics. Could you tell me a little bit more about it? Is this kind of an incentive that says if you do this, we can do that?
They have to do exactly. They have to do certain things to get to the next level, and participation and good behavior is part of that. But what I want to be very upfront with that. When we had the major, we had been doing it for a year and a half. We had the major budget cuts that hit us in the summer and fall. We lost almost all our mental health people. We had to stop it for a while, but now we're back up and doing it, with 3 6 social workers. So we're back at it again. It is exactly what you said, that pressure from one level to the other, then it can be more vulnerable. It can be more privileges. And with the intent that we try to make it as reachable as possible so that they can reach that level and then move on to the next level with the hope that they can move on and go back to the population. And I think there's a lot of stimulus in those.